This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
And now on Teacher Talk Radio, the Monday morning break with Marie, who this week is talking to Richard Ingham about inclusive education and systems thinking.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning, Richard, and thank you so much for joining me this morning on the radio. Really looking forward to talking to you this morning about, inclusion in education and about the need to, the need to recognise diversity and what we can be doing within our education system. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Marie. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so we recently met at a conference at UNESCO, and it was there, we were there sort of marking the 30-year anniversary of the Salamanca Agreement, and then following on a conference on inclusivity. So how did you find the two events there?
I think they were fantastic. The two kind of merged into one for me because it was a bit of a hectic week. I was there a few days before, helping with the setup and that kind of thing. So it was quite quick. I got some time to enjoy Paris because you've always got to find time to enjoy Paris. But I thought the events were so good, mostly because of the range of people they brought together under one roof. The event on the Wednesday, which was the sort of the UNESCO Salamanca anniversary event, was quite a high level dialogue involving, there were quite a few ministers of education there, some very senior people from NGOs, charities, and other departments. That was on UNESCO Room 1, which is very fancy, big stage, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we had some amazing talks there. And then the Thursday and the Friday was the IFIP and UNESCO joint conference on inclusion. And that was, I think, the range there of people from teachers, parents, people interested in inclusion, people from all around the world. I think, what was it, 140 different countries or something like that. People from all over the world talking about some good things. And yeah, it had a good buzz to it. It was great to be there.
Yeah, it was. I mean, yeah, I couldn't stop thinking about it really for days afterwards. It was just an absolutely fantastic event. And like you said, that room one on that first day and the people that were there, it was quite a wow moment. I mean, certainly for me, it was incredible. But, and I just think I came away thinking when you go to these things and you're with such like-minded people, it's just an absolute, it's so affirming. You're all sort of, you've got the same values and you're wanting to promote the same things and make change. And yeah, I thought it was just an incredible experience to be there.
I think one of the only things I'd like to see a bit different would be people there who weren't from the education sphere and who weren't kind of already involved in inclusive education, because talking to everybody there, everybody knew it was a good thing to do. Everybody, that people were coming at it from different angles and different viewpoints, which was great. But perhaps, well, it'd be interesting to have people there, that influential people in business and media and people like that, who really have the power to kind of pull strings in the education system. And I think we're going to talk about this in just a second. But it would be really interesting to have those sorts of people there that don't really know much about inclusive education, but would have that kind of opportunity to have their eyes open to it. And they'd be then in the position of power to sort of make some big changes. I mean, there were very powerful people there, and I think the whole event was fantastic. Definitely not taking away from that. Just one thing that might be added to any event like that and any conference where you're trying to make changes happen, kind of bring in those people you don't really expect to see there. Yeah. That might be quite fun.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. And almost that kind of challenge, I guess, of it, people that, either don't know or, don't necessarily agree. I think that would be quite something. So you gave you know, you just gave the wrapping up talks, which was just, you know, it was just brilliant. But on the Wednesday, you sort of summarised three key points from that fight. It was a very high level panel discussion. And the first point was that we need genuine system change within our education system. And then what is systems thinking and why is it important in regards to transforming education?
It's a good question. I mean, firstly, that was quite an interesting role I had there because we had about 3 hours of really interesting high level talks and I had about 3 minutes to wrap everything up. So yeah. They were quite brief, brief little points. So I'll try and keep it brief now. System change in education and systems thinking is all about looking at the current state of affairs in our education systems and kind of thinking a bit deeper about what is going wrong and what opportunities there are to make like genuine changes. The phrase system change is, or systems thinking is thrown about, I think, quite a bit without any real meaning behind it. You can do a Google search for systems thinking and find millions of projects where someone's just put systems approach or systems thinking on it just to get the funding or just to, you know, look at, it sounds a bit fancy, doesn't it? So I think what's important to remember with systems thinking is you as a team of people or as a group, of which was why the conference was so good, there's viewpoints, you really take apart, dissect the education system. Now, an education system of teachers and students and schools, it's also the support systems that get kids into school. It's the healthcare that allow children to have like good health and well-being so they can be in school. It's also the attitudes in the communities, the attitudes of local leaders or politicians who may be in favor of children with disabilities going to school or girls going to school, or they may not be. We look at Afghanistan at the moment. There's a huge issue there with women and education, and that's because of the attitudes and the social norms in that country. There are countless things within an education system, and it's always changing and it's always in flux, and it's an incredibly difficult thing to understand. And I think as soon as you say, right, I've got it, I've mapped the education system, I understand it perfectly, you kind of admitted that you don't understand what you're doing at all. It's something, it's not really something you can fully understand. So you can make your best guess at what's happening. And what you can do is you can draw maps, you can draw charts, you can bring lots of people together, attempt really to actually look at the underlying system and the underlying reasons for why things are the way they are. And in doing so, you can then look at places within that system where you can make changes that can then lead to lots of other changes. And this is something that I think you said earlier, this is something we call high leverage points. So if you think of a leverage point as being somewhere where you can make a small change and it then sort of the change ripples out to affect lots of other things. So I think that identifying places like that, just with business as usual, not just trying to kind of pump more money into it, not just trying to think, oh, we need more teachers, oh, we need how is this education system actually structured? What is it about the structure of the system? How is it set up that is excluding 250 million children around the world and all the many millions more inside the schools that aren't learning, that aren't engaged, that aren't having fun? I mean, that's not the fault of teachers. That's not the fault of students. That's the fault of the way, that's the way that these systems are designed, and the way that we continue to sort of make small changes to them. You know, it's rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's the classic example.
That's such a good analogy. Those statistics and those numbers, you know, were just incredible, aren't they? They're just 250 million children not in education, not accessing education. And like you said as well, it's more than that. It's the number that are technically in education or in theory in education, but their attendance isn't great because of the barriers, which is something I've spoken about before on previous shows, and is something I'm really passionate about, those barriers to attending. And also the ones that are there, they're present, but they're not engaged and they're not having fun, which, yeah, I'd love that. That was, you know, that's the way you framed it. Yeah,
there is kind of a thought experiment you can do on this. You can think about education systems and say, right, what would I do? Let's say you take education system in the UK, because we're in the UK, we're talking about that. What big change would you make to that, or could you make to that system? And what kind of things would play out? So maybe the listeners can do it now. You could say, what would happen if we got rid of standardized exams in education? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to sit here and say it's a good idea or a bad idea, although I think it's a very good idea. but I just let the listeners kind of just think about the knock-on effects that would have in terms of teaching, in terms of classroom engagement, in terms of adaptability to include more diversity in the classroom, meaningfully include, not just give students slightly different looking exam papers, and think of the huge knock-on effects, and then think about what would you need to do to make that happen, and what else it would affect in the system. And it's absolutely huge. And this is something that we'd call a leverage point, because it is, you're changing one particular thing, you're changing one aspect within the system, but it's something that would have massive ramifications throughout the whole education system and beyond, actually. And it's all tied up in how we view education as a social goal, how we position it politically as well. And it's gets very messy very quickly, this kind of thing.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Which is part of the fun.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely. Anyone to the listeners, yeah, do your own thought experiment and see how quickly it becomes a mess. I know standardized exams and the way we measure sort of progress and things like that was a very important topic over the few days. I knew that I was just gonna be so fascinated by this conversation. But if we just go, you know, I'm just interested then, we're talking about radical change, don't we? Radical transformation. That's kind of, that was the note that the conference started on. We need radical change. So how do you think that we can do that?
Big question. It is a big question, but I think what we have to remember is radical change isn't training 1,000 more teachers, and it isn't building 100 more schools, and it isn't putting ramps up to school doors for kids with wheelchairs. Those are really important things to do, and we definitely should not stop doing those things. But radical change is looking at how a system functions and admitting that it's broken and it doesn't work and it fails millions and millions of children. And that is a big problem for the children, but it's also a big problem for our societies, because those children are going to be the next generation. And don't really have to spell out what the problem is there. And I think this is something we might talk about in a minute. Yeah. But I think what we mean by radical system change isn't just looking at how we change pedagogies in classrooms. It's not just looking about spending more money in schools, buying equipment. It's looking at what the goal of education is. Like, if the goal is to get as many kids as possible in your school the best A-level grade so they can go to university, then the system's always going to be constructed around that. Everything's going to coalesce around that. The teaching style, the behavioral issues, the kind of the buildings themselves, the classroom structures, the one teacher at the front, the 20 kids, the 50 kids, wherever you are in the world, sitting still and listening. I mean, we colleagues of mine have worked in schools with 200 kids in a class and one teacher, and they have the same setup. You have 200 kids and one teacher at the front. So I think radical change is looking and having, you know, very frank and sincere conversations about how we think about what the purpose of education is. What do we want education to be for? And that's a conversation that isn't really had very much nowadays. We, especially in kind of the places that matter, so in political spheres, in ministries of education, they're all about the numbers. They're all about kind of what we'd call the parameters and systems in the fancy lingo that people insist on using. But basically it's changing these numbers. You're trying to get, we'll try and get more A-star grades this year. And then we can say, right, we've done a really good job. we're trying to get a higher ranking in PISA so we can be better than, you know, right now we're below Italy in the charts. We want to go above it, Italy in the charts. And it kind of turns into this competitive nature of education. And as soon as you do that, you end up devaluing the diversity and devaluing the energetic sort of thrill of learning and placing the emphasis on the numbers instead. And I think that's a real shame. And I think in terms of radical change, radical system change, we need to look at what's happening now in like school league tables, in PISA, and in the politics around education. And that's all quite worryingly going more and more towards this comparative-based, competitive, sort of quantifiable scores and test scores. And if you know, we think, oh, we've got good test scores, we've done a good job. Everything else about that isn't being considered. So I think as soon as we start having conversations about that, that's when we can actually radically change what our schools look like.
Yeah, I mean what you've said, you know, thinking about what are we trying to achieve with education. I'm trying to achieve that love of learning, that the want to go on and find things that give you that spark of interest, motivation to love, kind of so use that curiosity, that engagement.
I would bet that almost every teacher is the same.
Yes, right?
I was a teacher before and I was the same, but and teachers are great people. I think I'm speaking to my audience here on a Teacher Talk Radio.
Teachers are great people. Yeah.
Know your crowd, right? Know your room. But they're ingenious, they're innovative, but at the minute their hands are tied by the systems that we have in place. Yes. And they're not able to make learning fun. They're not able to be engaging because of the strict kind of routines and the strict systems that we have. And when we took just one more note on systems and systems change. Every system has a goal. Okay, you can see a bicycle as a system. It's made up of wheels and cogs and handlebars. Its goal is to get you from A to B down the road. An education system is made up of schools, of curriculum boards, ministries, parents, all that kind of thing. It has a goal. If its goal is to get children to get high exam scores, everything about that system is going to be designed around that goal.
Yes.
If you manage to change the goal of the education system, which isn't easy, by the way, if you manage to do that, then everything about it will change.
Definitely. So, just so fascinating. We're just going to take a quick break and go into the news. And then when we come back, I'd just love to talk more now about how reframing how we think about diversity. So we'll come on to that.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
The BBC reported on a long-term study by the Institute of Fiscal Studies, which found children living near Sure Start centres did better at GCSE. The research says these living near a centre performed up to 3 grades better than those living further away. Sure Start began in 1998 to support new parents, especially in disadvantaged areas, but due to austerity, many have since closed. The Department for Education said its Family Hub scheme had a number of advantages over the Sure Start model. The IFS study used postcodes from when children were age 5 to determine proximity to centres and looked at the GCSE results of those children 11 years later. It found what it describes as big improvements in performance in those living near a centre, especially those from low-income backgrounds. Former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, Labour Chancellor at the time the initiative was launched, said the UK now needs a new Sure Start, and described the results as what most parents already know, that a supportive environment in early years was life-transforming. Among all children in the study, those who live near a Sure Start centre performed better than those who lived far away, but the trend was most pronounced amongst those eligible for free school meals and those from minority ethnic backgrounds. According to The Guardian, schools in England could lose up to £1 billion in funding by 2030, with exceptional falls in pupil numbers prompting closures. Mergers and school closures are already happening in parts of London, where pupil numbers have been falling for some time. According to the think tank Education Policy Institute, the North East is projected to see the greatest decline in primary pupil numbers, down by 13% by 2028-29. At secondary school level, Yorkshire and Humber, the North East and London are projected to have the largest falls in pupil numbers, although other areas, including the West Midlands and the South East, have rising numbers. Pupil numbers had grown because of a fertility surge in the 2000s, but as that cohort has moved through, numbers are now falling. Even with increases in per pupil funding, the EPI predicts schools will find it hard to balance budgets as fewer pupils do not lead to reduced costs. The decline is due mainly to a falling birth rate and changing migration patterns. Full details of the EPI projections can be found on the Guardian website. Schools Week reports on the decision by Ofsted to appoint a former chief inspector, Dame Christine Gilbert, to lead the independent inquiry into its response to the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine served as the HMCI from 2006 to 2011 and now chairs the Education Endowment Foundation. The learning review follows a coroner's ruling in December that an Ofsted inspection contributed to the death of Mrs. Perry, then head teacher of Caversham Primary School. The review will consider actions Ofsted took in response to hearing about the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine will have access to relevant records, Ofsted staff, and the opportunity to meet with Ruth Perry's family as part of the review. The review will not examine the November 2022 inspection of Caversham Primary. Teaching unions have expressed concern about the appointment of Gilbert, saying it was critical that the review was robust, independent, and impartial, and that some would, rightly, question the notion of a former HMCI reviewing the work of Ofsted. A report will be completed after the review and recommendations will focus on future actions. Schools Week also reports on a plan for the Department for Education to work with the Scout Association to provide 40,000 explorers, those aged 14 to 18, with the skills and knowledge they need to consider a career in teaching. The DfE will work with the Scouts to create age-appropriate activities that inspire young people to consider a career in teaching, linking to relevant badges and awards. It did, however, clarify that there are currently no plans for a teaching badge. The policy is part of the DfE's Get Into Teaching plan, which aims to elevate the status of the profession and target new audiences who have not yet considered teaching as a career. The scheme will launch in September and it is hoped that it will reach 40,000 young people. The Scouts will create support and guidance material for those running the programme. The initial one-year contract is worth £43,000, but can be extended subject to budget availability. Finally, a teenager who campaigned for skateboarding to be included in school qualifications is proud to see it added to the list of approved GCSE sports in Wales. According to the report on the BBC News website, Qualifications Wales has added 13 new sports to the approved list for GCSE PE. Other newly allowed sports include BMX, shooting, kickboxing and wakeboarding. The new Made for Wales GCSE in Physical Education and Health will be available for first teaching from September 2026. The change makes Wales the second UK nation to include skateboarding, behind Northern Ireland. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Okay, so yeah, as I said before the news, I'd love to talk a bit more about diversity now as well, reframing how we think about it. I mean, the message is, again, coming from Salamanca Agreement and from global inclusion was all about, well, all means all, isn't it? And that inclusion benefits everyone. What are your thoughts on how we reframe how we think about diversity?
Well, I think one of the moving on from Salamanca, there was a commitment, a UNESCO commitment made in Cali in Colombia in 2019. I think I don't remember the whole wording for it, but it was a kind of a reaffirmation of this push towards inclusive education. And one of the phrases in that commitment was diversity should be seen as enriching. And I think as soon as you do see diversity as enriching in education, if you see it as a positive thing, like if you genuinely see it as a positive thing, then everything else about how you educate people will kind of change around that. If you see diversity as a problem because of the way that your education systems are set up that promote kind of pushing people into the same mold and standardization, then of course diversity is a problem. The education systems as they are all around the world in most countries try and make people put people in a mold, test them in the same exams, and then rank them based on those exam scores. If that's the case, then anything that is outside of that, you know, quote unquote norm is a problem. That's just the way things are. That you can't sugarcoat it. That's the way the systems are set up. And if that's the case, diversity seen as a problem, how on earth are we going to get all means all being, you know, a success? How on earth can you align inclusive education with people seeing diversity as a problem? It's chalk and cheese. It's like, yes. I wrote in a paper recently, it's like trying to have capitalism and communism thriving in the same country. It's just two completely different ideological viewpoints conflicting. So I think that in terms of diversity, we can't just, well, we can say, oh, we have to look at diversity. We have to find diversity a good thing. But people do like diversity. People do find diversity a good thing, but they're not able to in the educational context because of how it's set up. So I think in order to be able to do that for people, for teachers and students and parents, I think deep down think that they don't want everyone to be the same, do they? How boring would that be in a classroom? But I think they genuinely would like to be able to work with that diversity a bit more. But the way that the system's structured, they're not being able to. Sure, a teacher can say, I believe my classroom would be should be more diverse. I'm going to teach them in more diverse ways. I'm not going to make them sit the end of term exam because that's exclusive to some children. They're going to be out of a job. That's not, yeah. Teachers aren't going to, it's not a teacher's role to do that. It's people who set curricula, it's people like groups like Ofsted, it's groups like the media who have a huge influence over how the public perceive education and its goals. Yeah. It's people who set education policy. That if we can tap into these people, they're the ones that can actually make these high leverage changes in this area. Mm. And then we might actually, because I think I had great fun teaching. I used to be a junior school science teacher, and we had a really diverse classroom in the best possible way. And people were good at different things. That's just life, right? Some people were good at hands-on stuff. Some people really loved the book work a bit more. And if we were able to just, you know, let kids learn the way that they want to learn and enjoy things the way they want to enjoy them and not constrict them, then diversity, I think, can be seen as a good thing. And other kids in that class can then learn from others. And it's just, It's a microcosm of real life. That doesn't teach academic skills. It teaches social skills, and it teaches about, you know, how important is it nowadays that we see diversity as a good thing?
Exactly. And like you said, you know, that is a phrase, isn't it? If we were all the same, it would be incredibly boring, but also we just wouldn't have that range of, you know, skills, interests, all of those things, motivations, you know, dreams, culture, all of that, that makes our world, you know, that makes us who we are, makes us human. And you're right, you know, it's just as we're talking, and I'm thinking that, you know, that is often, I think, whether that's just the people that I surround myself with, but that is appreciated. I think that is appreciated and valued in life. But you're right. It, by the systems that are in place and the curriculum and the measures and the way that we have to measure progress and things like that, it's not in education. It's not valued. And in fact, I would say as well, sometimes it's a problem, isn't it? It's an issue. It's like, well, I've got all these diverse needs in my class, in my school, and I want to meet them, but I'm under so much pressure for results and results driven and sort of, I don't know, sometimes I guess tick box exercises and things like that, that it is near on impossible, isn't it? Even if somebody does hold those values, that diversity is a brilliant thing.
I think that this is one of the best ways to think about inclusive education, because a lot of people think about inclusive education as getting children with disabilities into school or getting marginalized learners into school.
Yeah.
But I think as soon as you start thinking about diversity as being a good thing and you actually change your education systems to match that, then they will become naturally inclusive.
Yeah.
Because the very way that you think about diversity, as soon as you appreciate that everyone is different, I mean, literally everyone is different. That's the whole point of diversity. Some people have skills in some areas. Some people will have difficulty walking. Some people might have difficulty seeing. That same person might be really good at maths. It's a big sort of messy, bubbling cauldron of difference. Every classroom, let alone every school or every country, everyone is different. If you set up education systems to cater for that difference and to thrive on that difference, then you are really on the road to genuine inclusive education. If you are basically trying to find as many marginalized groups as you can and you're shoving them into schools and trying to make them fit the current system, that's never going to be inclusive education.
No, and actually extremely detrimental and damaging to those people.
Sure.
That you're doing that to, which is, you know,
not
the
to
absolute
patronizing as well.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's that, I guess, that top down thing, isn't it? You need this as a marginalized community or as somebody.
Yeah, it's a power. It's a power dynamic as well. Yeah.
Yeah. We're telling you that this is the best system for you and this is how you're going to learn. And yeah, you're right. That's not true inclusion at all. So thirdly, then going back to your points that you made, spoke about how we all need We all need quality and inclusive education systems. That learners, our pupils, our students are all directly impacted by education, but that we as societies benefit. So can we just, could you talk a bit more about that? Because that was just really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And this was, I think this goes back to what we were just talking about diversity and about the appreciation of difference. Because at the moment, there's a tendency to fear the other. There's huge political polarization. There's lots of conflicts raging around the world. And I think a lot of this is down to not seeing others as, not seeing diversity as a good thing, not seeing difference as a good thing, as an interesting thing, as something to engage with, but as something to hide from. And I think that stems from our education systems. I mean, children from a young age are being indoctrinated in systems that say, oh, well, everyone should be good at this particular thing. And everyone that's not is a failure. Anyone that managed to do this well is a success. That's the implicit sort of point of exams and school and some and standardized learning. If you get your A's in GCSE or your high scores in GCSEs, your A's and A levels, if you go to a fancy university, you're seen to have succeeded, air quotes, in life. Yeah. If you don't, you're seen to have not succeeded. And I think that's a real problem. And I think that translates directly to what we're seeing in terms of, okay, I'm everything I do, everything I think is right. Someone else thinks something different. They must be wrong. But there's no space in our school for open dialogue about differences and about different kind of viewpoints and different cultures. School is an amazing place where you have millions of young people. And I think I was speaking to somebody yesterday on another show, and there's 50 million children in school in the United States. And 50 million, you have 50 million, and that's just in the States. There's hundreds of millions around the world. You have hundreds of millions of children. You have an opportunity to teach them about the things in life that we want to value.
Yeah.
About diversity and respecting difference, and about ending prejudice, ending racism, that kind of thing. Instead, we're learning god-awful trigonometry and longshore drift and geography lessons, and it's like, come on. And it's such a, and there are so many problems in the world right now that we should be teaching kids about, not as problems, but about as opportunities where they can make a difference. You know, you might, why not, the UN has this amazing framework called the SDGs, and I know everyone listening to this will probably be aware that SDG 4 is the one about inclusive education, but the Sustainable Development Goals cover areas, they cover things from climate change, conflict resolution, safe drinking water, renewable energy, life on water, life on land, all kinds of different things. Why don't you design a curriculum around this?
Even do your what if your school improvement plan and college improvement plan, you know, your objectives were based on SDGs
it seems so obvious. It seems such a missed opportunity. We're teaching children, we're boring children to death in schools because of the, and that's no fault of teachers. That is, again, that has to be made very clear, because of the way these schools set up, the way the system's set up. There are some amazing opportunities that we're missing currently. And I think that we're going to live to regret by not teaching the kids of today about the issues around climate change and about the issues around conflict and about the issues around pandemic and things like that. And not just the actual science behind it. We had great fun. I used to teach 10, 11 year old science, and we did a whole term about climate change. And I was in a school. And again, this is because the school I was working in was quite flexible. I was able to do that. It wasn't just, I think a lot of teachers would like to do what I did, but they just can't due to the way the school is set up and that system is set up. But because I was in quite a relaxed environment, I was able to plan a whole terms curriculum around not just the science of, so we did the biology of the habitat loss and the ecosystem, but also the physics of the light reflecting from the sea ice more effectively than the dark water when it melts, albedo effect, things like that. And it was all kind of meshed into one, but it was contextualized in a real problem. But also, I mean, these are 10-year-olds. We then went into the politics behind big oil and gas, trying to push their sort of narrative forward, and the conflicting interests of sort of right left wing groups and that kind of thing. And this wasn't hard to understand for 10-year-olds. They could get the problems there. Mm. And I think we undervalue children as much as you undervalue teachers in terms of what they can understand.
Yes.
And I think that's a huge issue as well. So it's just, you know, I don't know how long I can rant about this. How long am I allowed to rant about this?
Yeah, keep going, keep ranting. I love it. I also those lessons sound amazing.
Well, it's just because I was given the freedom to do that. And almost every teacher isn't.
Yeah.
And that again is a systems problem, not a teacher problem.
Definitely. But also what you, I'm just really struck by what you've said about undervaluing children, you know, undervaluing their understanding, I think, but also their capacity and their power to be the change. You know, it is going to be them, isn't it? I mean, particularly kind of climate change, climate crisis, it is at a really critical point of our future, and it is going to be those generations are going to have that, suffer the impact of that, already suffering the impact of that.
So to get back to your original question, to summarize that point, and quite a few people brought this point up in their talk, so I thought this would be a good point to summarize at the end. It's inclusive education is about children. It is about giving them the opportunities they need and respecting them and valuing them. But it's also about everybody, right? In two ways, because everybody needs to be involved in reforming our education systems. It just goes back to what I said at the very beginning about just educators being at these conferences. This involves more than just people in the education system. This involves people in the media. This involves people in businesses. This involves people with influence in the communities. That is important, I think, to consider, but also it involves everybody, because if we give children today, you know, the education they need, and we educate them on the values we uphold, like diversity, equity, inclusion, then I genuinely think that's one of the best ways we can help solve some of the crises we're seeing at the moment for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's the call, isn't it? Like, we just need more people to take this message and hear this message and really be open to, like you said at the beginning, you know, that systems thinking. What is the goal we're aiming for? What do we need education to be doing? And how is it not doing that now? And then, you know, I guess, like you said, you know, it's a system. So then it's working backwards from this is what we need to achieve. This is where it's going horribly wrong. And the consequences of that are awful, aren't they? If we stay as we are. I mean, like you said, it's not recruiting that a few thousand more teachers. It's not buying more resources or putting a ramp outside your school. That's not it. It's going right back to that goal of education and making a massive change.
And it's difficult. It's difficult politically to make such a change, especially with the kind of political cycles we have. When you have a four-year election cycle or a five-year election cycle, it's very difficult to make such big changes like that, because at the very beginning of those changes, if you do manage to make them, there's going to probably be some wonderful chaos for a year or two. And that doesn't wonderful really chaos. Tend to play well. Yeah, which I think would be a good thing.
But it doesn't tend to play well with your core
voters, that sort of thing. So it's a very difficult thing to do. But this is where we have to think a bit outside the box in terms of how we might change these systems. We need to bring people into the conversations, to go back to that same point, who aren't usually in those conversations. Yes. People with very high influence in the media, people with high influence in, well, I think the media is a very important one, because the way that we perceive education and the way that we perceive the purpose of education is a really good way to change how that will actually go.
Yeah.
Because if people then want to vote for change in it, politicians will suddenly start taking interest overnight. And yeah. I think that is one of the powerful ways you can make a change. I think another is the rules of the system, where you have policies that dictate how things should be. If your policy is that every child in England at the age of 16 has to sit a certain number of these tests at the end of each year, then that's a policy. You can't get around that. If you try and get around that as a teacher, you lose your job. If you don't yeah. turn up to an exam as a student, you're on the scrap heap. The policy in that case just has to change.
Yeah.
So I think those are two of the, we want to change mindsets around education, but you can't just go firing in and change mindsets overnight. I think you have to be a bit smarter, and you have to look at these levers that you can pull in order to pull the ones that you can't.
That's very thought provoking. Yeah, I think I'm just thinking about that. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So it is, isn't it? Thinking about those levers.
It's another interesting another thought experiment for listeners.
Yeah.
I mean, it's usually there's a kind of a call to action at this point, but maybe a call to thoughtfulness, perhaps, like where consider the system that you're in and consider your role within it and your power within it. What can you change, or who can you speak to, or what can you do to actually locate one of these levers for change and give it a good yank?
Love that. Yeah, please do that, people that are listening. Go away.
Yeah, no pressure. But...
yeah, no pressure. But come away from this, I think, hopefully feeling motivated and wanting to make that change. And yeah, like you said, just think who you can talk to and go and yank a lever.
One of the best ways to see this, everything we've been talking about, is in a positive way rather than a negative way, because a lot of the, especially the statistics and a lot of things you read in education, it's very doom and gloom about numbers of kids out of school and all the issues of financing and things like that. But if you see this systems approach as an opportunity for changing, yeah. like making big changes, rather than as a way to say, oh, we're so screwed with this system we have at the moment. If we see it as a way of thinking, oh, well, if we just change this and this and this, this will then change this and this. And it's a really nice way of being quite kind of positive about it and chunking it into small steps, but that actually then lead on to bigger things.
Yeah. And like you said, change for good, framing it as that's change for good, not like you said, looking at everything and going, oh my God, this is an absolute diabolical mess. But yeah, that change for, and I think earlier you talked as well, didn't you, about that ripple effect, which I always love, but those making a change and that leads to another and another and another. And like you said, it could just start with talking to one person or thinking about something slightly differently, and going back to, I mean, one of my favorite things that you've said in this was that energetic thrill of learning. I mean, that's what we want, isn't it, from education above all, the thrill of learning and teachers being able to facilitate that and support that and grow it, because it's learning's lifelong as well, isn't it? I don't think, you know, it doesn't stop at 16, 18, you know, 20, 21. Learning is a lifelong thing. Very reluctantly, we need to wrap up because our time is running out. So, do you have any, if you would like to leave our lovely listeners with one thought?
Well, that's a good question. I think the one thing is, if we can all see diversity as enriching, then everything changes.
Yeah, I love that. And one that I took from your wrap up at the very end of the 3 days, like you said, it was a full on experience. It was amazing. But something that really, really stayed with me from your final talk was when you said education can save the world, but we need to save education first. And that was just so incredibly powerful. So thank you.
It's a pleasure. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for this morning. And as always, you know, I'd love to hear people's sort of thoughts on here. If anyone does either of those thought experiments, we'd love to hear. We're both over on X, aren't we, Richard, and LinkedIn. And you can find me through Teachers Talk Radio. But for today, yeah, thank you so much, Richard. I hope to catch up again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.